Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Thursday, October 4th, 2012. The day after the first presidential debate held in Denver, Colorado. And it's widely believed that Mitt Romney won. Anything.
If you believe all this, but don't cry, don't do anything. No lies, back in my government. No tears, party time is here again. President gases are for president.
Intro music today from the Psychedelic Furs, and we'll get to the president and the would-be gas bag in a moment, but the top story is not about the corporate debate of the two major parties held in Denver last night. It's about an affirmation from the Second Court of Appeals, the Second Circuit, which puts on hold the permanent injunction issued by New York Federal Court Judge Catherine Forrest on September 12th. This is the long-running case that we have been covering in depth here at peterbcollins.com, the National Defense Authorization Act, and it is its unconstitutional clause, Section 1021B, which allows for the indefinite detention of an American citizen accused of terrorism without charge or trial at a military base. And this is insulting, because we knew that the Obama administration laid down. They didn't really participate in the court proceedings, in the hearing that was held in March, in the hearing prior to the issuing of a temporary injunction in May, and in the proceedings right before the permanent injunction was issued in September. And I reference once again Judge Forrest's courageous 112-page decision that made it very clear that she was treated with contempt. And that the Justice Department said, you ought to stay out of this, Judge. It's a national security case. It's bigger than you. And she stood up for our constitutional rights. And then, after she issued the permanent injunction, the Obama administration tried to embarrass her into putting her own ruling on hold. She said no. Then they found a judge who carried them through to September 28th. And then this week, a three-judge panel affirmed the emergency stay. And now, once again, our constitutional rights are openly violated, and you and I are subject to this law. The president says he won't use it. He falsely says that he didn't want the authority to begin with. But when it was put on hold, his lawyers raced into court to make sure that no more than 5 days went by without this draconian authority. And it is shameful in so many respects, including the fact that that inside the beltway tool, Jim Lehrer, and I will resist the temptation to make fun of him for his age, but he didn't bring up any issue like this. He lobbed the biggest 12-inch softballs that you can imagine at these two candidates, and then sat there as each of the candidates, Romney a little more rudely than Obama, ignored his effort to set time limits on their discussion. And the format, which of course excluded minor party candidates, and we'll get to them in a moment, didn't work out as we had hoped, where the candidates would actually talk back and forth with each other. Obama had many opportunities to interrupt Mitt Romney, and he didn't have to call him a liar or do anything that was inappropriate or uncivil. But he failed to challenge Romney at so many turns. And the list of things that Obama didn't mention that could have supported his case against Romney is quite lengthy. Now let's start with what I predicted yesterday here in our News and Comment podcast. I said that there were at least five topics that would not be mentioned. We already touched on the National Defense Authorization Act. Of course, that didn't come up. Wiretapping and the Patriot Act? Nope, didn't get mentioned. And Jim Lehrer wouldn't reference that. Cutting defense spending? They only raised that for the purpose of opposing it. Romney saying flatly, he will not cut defense spending. Prosecution of people on Wall Street? Well, there was a lot of talk about Dodd-Frank. But Obama didn't even bring up the good points of Dodd-Frank, like the Consumer Protection Agency. Instead, he unloaded on predatory borrowers. You know what I mean? We hear a lot about predatory lenders. There isn't a borrower who got a commission for taking out a crappy, adjustable loan. Nope. There isn't a borrower who said, would you please give me a subprime loan? I don't want a 30-year fixed. I don't deserve it. And so while the debate opened with Obama performing relatively strongly, challenging Romney on his proposals to put in $5 trillion worth of tax cuts and increase defense spending, very quickly, the president became much more of an observer of this debate than a participant. And as Matt Bai points out in today's New York Times, it's as if Obama has his own enthusiasm gap. Okay, I'll show up at this thing with Mitt, but I am not getting drawn into some kind of debate. And Matt Bai speculates that Obama doesn't actually enjoy being president in the way that Bill Clinton did. And Clinton still enjoys the give and take and the ability of trying to sell you on his policies. Obama appears to think that that's beneath him. And he'll go out on the stump and recite the, you know, rehearsed rhetoric. And he'll allow his advisors to run a lot of negative campaign ads, some of which are very accurate. But he doesn't want to soil his hands. He doesn't want to engage in the mental combat. Matt Bai, quote, says, he came to Denver with no larger theme he wanted urgently to get across, no story to tell, no apparent passion for the chance to make himself understood and make his opponent look silly. He was there to defend his policies, but he wasn't going to get all needy about it. And no one was going to make him have an ounce of fun. The only real lighthearted moments were at the beginning when Romney acknowledged that it was Barack and Michelle's 20th wedding anniversary, and that they were spending it with him. There was a second joke when Romney apologized for calling it Obamacare, and Obama said, well, I kind of like that. But the fifth item that I predicted would not come up was anything reflecting on poverty or the poor people in our country. And I was slightly wrong about that. Romney made two references to the poor, without, of course, offering anything to ease their situation. And also, as we mentioned yesterday, neither candidate uttered the word climate change or talked about the real need to address the biggest long-term issue that we face not as a nation but as a planet. And when I led today with the story about the new injunction which blocks the injunction against the NDAA, that is an issue that is bigger than this election, bigger than Romney or Obama or even both of them. It is a huge incursion into our constitutional rights, and it has gone with very little debate. And it very much should be a part of this presidential debate, and Obama should have to explain why he has sought that authority and then sought to preserve it when an honest judge said, no, this is unconstitutional. Need I remind you that Obama used to teach constitutional law? I spent some time watching the Democracy Now! Stream, and I want to praise Amy Goodman for performing a very important public service to permit Green Party candidate Jill Stein and Justice Party candidate Rocky Anderson to join the debate in a kind of virtual way. After each exchange between the major candidates, Democracy Now! Paused the tape, the feed, and inserted equivalent-length commentary from Stein and Anderson. And they raised a lot of these issues that should have been discussed. Obama didn't even touch the war on women. The draconian efforts to roll back hard-fought reproductive rights. It's mind-boggling what was left out. And while Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson don't have a chance to be heard or to prevail, even to win a single state or a single electoral college vote, their voices deserve to be heard. And Democracy Now! Leveled the playing field. There were some problems with the stream, so I wasn't able to watch it all the way through. But the counter I was looking at showed that I was watching a stream that had about 125,000 viewers. Now, it's quite possible there were multiple streams. I don't really know. But I'm glad that at least 125,000 people expressed through their computers, through their clicks, that the two-party system and the exclusion of other points of view from presidential debate dialogue is wrong and needs to be changed. Now, you ever have a moment where you have an exchange with somebody, even an argument, and 10 minutes later, you think of the line that escaped your grasp when you were in the heat of that moment? Well, in the morning after, Obama, Axelrod, et al. Have cranked up the spin machine. You got to ask yourself, where were they last night before the debate? Why did they let Obama attempt this safe, straddled, centrist approach? He wasn't talking to me or you. Nope, Obama figures that we are locked in, have nowhere to go, and he doesn't need to talk to progressives. And so he was really very carefully dancing through the minefield, trying not to offend independent and swing state voters. And we've seen this before with John Kerry. It doesn't work. There is no centrist party. There is really no centrist pool of voters in this country. They are centrist on some issues and, like everybody else, extreme on a few others. And the way to win the votes of those people is to stand for something. Even if they don't agree with you, if you have a clear and explicit position that defines you as a person and your political party, independent voters will make a choice. But when you try to pander to them, and when you try to play it safe by not offending them, everybody loses. And I was pumping gas at $4.50 a gallon into my car this morning, and there's this TV screen at the gas station. And they popped up a poll from CNN, an instant poll that showed 67% think Romney won. Well, I don't really feel he won. Obama was the loser. Obama was lame, he was weak, and he missed many opportunities. But we're the real losers here. Because Romney was up there spinning and reconfiguring his positions, and that's one of the reasons their morning after strategy from the Obama team is to say, who was that? So at a rally in Denver today, Obama said, I met this very spirited fellow last night who claimed to be Mitt Romney. But it couldn't be Mitt Romney because the real Mitt Romney has been running around the country for the last year promising $5 trillion in tax cuts that favor the wealthy. The fellow on stage last night said he didn't know anything about that. He went on. The man on stage last night, he does not want to be held accountable for the real Mitt Romney's decisions and what he's been saying for the last year. And that's because he knows full well that we don't want what he's been selling for the last year. Axelrod calls Romney an artful dodger, devoid of honesty, rooted in deception, untethered to the truth, and his comments well-delivered but fraudulent. Why couldn't the president say that? The format enabled him to jump in at any time, and he never did. He always waited for Romney's filibuster to end or at least pause before he would speak. And his lack of engagement and animation left many of us just shaking our heads. Greg Palast sent out a great email today, essentially saying WTF. And while Obama made some reasonable points about his policies and, you know, what he believes in, what he might do if he gets a second term, well, a little bit about that, he didn't respond to a lot of the falsehoods raised by Romney. And as I mentioned, he didn't bring up the war on women, didn't talk about Romney's 47% write-off of Americans who are dependent on the government, didn't talk about his taxes, didn't talk about Bain Capital. No, instead, he tried to split the difference. At one point saying that he and Romney were pretty similar about Social Security. That doesn't work. It clearly doesn't work. Now, here's a list of five lies from Daily Kos that were uttered by Mitt Romney. Flatly, it says Romney lied when he claimed that pre-existing conditions are covered under his plan. Well, we've never seen his plan, and from everything I know, he's made the claim that he likes that part of Obamacare, but he doesn't describe how he can repeal parts of the Affordable Health Care Act, and insurers and drug companies and medical providers and HMOs will go along with it. It's a package deal. It's a stinky deal. But the pre-existing condition waiver was given up by insurance companies because they got other things in return. Next, Romney lied when he said that Obama had cut Medicare by $716 billion. That's proven. That's just a line of bullshit that the Republicans keep peddling. And Obama was not very effective in refuting that. Romney lied when he denied proposing a $5 trillion tax cut. He has. He lied when he said Obama had added almost as much to the federal debt as all the prior presidents combined. That's not true. But if you watch Fox News, you believe it is. He lied when he resurrected death panels. And somebody, a fact checker, called that one of the biggest whoppers of the night. And his effort to say that Obamacare is government-controlled health care because it appoints an advisory group that tries to limit rising costs or unnecessary procedures, that's the equivalent of Sarah Palin's death panel, that is a big lie. And he lied when he stated that half the green energy companies given stimulus funds had failed, when the fact is 3 out of about 36 have failed. And so there are fact checkers, too. I've got another list here. Let's be fair. Obama inaccurately or falsely stated that over the last 2 years, healthcare premiums have gone up, but they've gone up slower than any time in the last 50 years. Well, he's mixing healthcare premiums and the cost of healthcare because the insurance premiums have gone up faster than inflation, while the underlying healthcare costs have not. And you don't have to be a genius to see that the insurance companies are taking a profit there while they can. Another falsehood, Romney basically blamed Obama for the increase in gasoline prices, when it's Romney's corporate buddies who have taken us for a big ride. And we're being hustled here once again in California because they've jacked up our prices based on a refinery issue and a pipeline problem. And we saw after the Chevron fire in August that they used the same excuse to raise prices, even though the supply of refined gasoline was not really affected. And while Obama did ding the oil companies, I'll give him credit there. That was the most populist position he took. Rolling back the tax benefits, the oil depletion allowance, that's what it is, that allows big oil to take somewhere between $3 and $4 billion a year in tax write-offs. And it's not a large amount of money. And Romney appeared to nail the fact and say it's only $2.8 billion, not $4 billion, as the president said. I frankly don't know. So the bottom line is that Obama was bruised, chastened. They've come out swinging. And the next debate next week is the vice presidential candidates, Biden and Ryan. And so the next time Romney and Obama are on the stage is almost 2 weeks from now. And I predict once again that it will be a debate that stays with broad general issues, that lets each candidate spin up and lie about their positions. And this election is still very close. Close enough to be stolen. And the Washington Post reports today that the television networks who have paid for exit polls for decades now, over 20 years, they've decided that in 19 states, we don't need exit polls. Now, they're claiming that these are the states that are so far gone for one candidate or the other that it just doesn't matter. And on the one hand, they've made exit polls irrelevant because of the secrecy surrounding them. They are used for the entertainment of the network anchors and talking heads during election night coverage. And then they tweak those numbers to match the reported count coming from that state's Secretary of State. And that obscures any swings that would suggest election fraud, voter fraud, or any other kind of fraud, including tabulation fraud. And so while I lament that they're not going to conduct polls in 19 states, I could accept this if they said, but we're going to do honest exit polling in the other states, and we will release the data without adjusting it to match the official tally. Oh, sorry. I was daydreaming again. In other news, there have been an unusual wave of earthquakes near Dallas, Texas. Three quakes shook a suburb west of Dallas over this past weekend. And what do you think caused it? Shifting tectonic plates? A tsunami in the Gulf of Mexico? No. Fracking. These were frack quakes, just like the ones that have occurred in Ohio, in the northeast portion along the Marcellus Shale. And according to this news report that I have in my hot little hands here, before the quakes that occurred in 2008, Dallas had never recorded a magnitude 3 earthquake or higher. And the story doesn't give me the Richter numbers on the recent seismic events near Dallas last weekend. But they're at least noteworthy enough, and I infer from this article that they were higher than a magnitude of 3. Finally today, I want to credit Chris Hedges. In his most recent book, he profiles 5 different areas of the United States that have essentially been written off. They don't matter anymore. Either all the resources have been extracted, or the people there don't matter. Native Americans, farm workers in Florida, and the people of beleaguered Camden, New Jersey. And I recently learned that they are going to fire all of the members of the Camden Police Department and replace them with lower-cost county sheriff deputies. This is an end run on the union contracts of the local cops. And when you read into it, the cops have really sweetheart contracts. And I can't defend every element of those contracts. But Hedges really, in a dark and colorful way, explained the deep corruption of Camden, New Jersey. That the people who run the town don't even live there for the most part. They're simply profiting from the misery of others and from the decline of a once thriving manufacturing city. If you happen to live in Camden or New Jersey, I invite you to send me an email and let me know your thoughts about it, because from this distance, it all smells pretty bad. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. Check out the latest podcast, my in-depth interviews, at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.